You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Everybody. All right, so look, no dilly-dallying, no throat clearing, no long, bloated wind-up, just the last 5 days in this economy, and a very specific day next week in about the next 7 minutes or so. Kate Davidson's at Politico. Brian Chung is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Okay.
So, Kate, let me get to you, and I want to point out, as everybody has seen the news, I'm sure, that the president signed the Inflation Reduction Act this week, and I want to ask your sense of the Biden administration's plan, right, when it came into office, was to fundamentally expand the role of government in this economy. We talked about that a lot a year and a half, 2 years ago. This is sort of delivering on that promise, right? He is injecting now the government into this economy in a substantial way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so hard because the original plan that the president talked about on the campaign trail and the big, really ambitious, I mean, they had to break it into two parts, if you remember, the families plan and the jobs plan. Huge amount of, an overhaul and revamp in so many areas, child care, you know, family paid leave, health care, climate. And so if you, you know, compare it to that, it feels, you know, greatly slims down. I mean, they're not doing all that they wanted to do. But right, if you step back and think about it, it is a very big deal. It is introducing some really big changes into the economy. So I definitely think it's safe to say that, they are delivering on a really big chunk of that promise. And I think, in talking last year to economists and folks, I mean, I'm thinking of Janet Yellen, too, and sure. I always talked about this. I mean, climate is so important to them. I think that it was viewed as really substantial. They're disappointed about some of the family components that they couldn't get done, but it's a really big deal.
Brian, this was, it used to be Build Back Better, then it became Build Back Mansion after Senator Joe Manchin trying to make him happy, and now it is the Inflation Reduction Act. I'm obliged by the laws of, I don't know, fact, to point out that this act doesn't really reduce inflation all that much.
Well, not in the immediate term, at least. I mean, there's some tax credits for energy-related home improvements. You've got a little bit of EV tax credits for those wanting to buy a Tesla, healthcare changes, oil drilling provisions. But a lot of these types of things are going to take many, many years to kick in. And there are actually dates by which we shouldn't even expect to see any of that bleed through. But the idea is that overall, it should improve the nation's infrastructure so that, for example, energy isn't as expensive as it is right now. We know how reliant we were on foreign oil, which was a big reason why the whole high oil prices that we experienced a few months ago, earlier in the summer, were such a big story that weighed on the American political view of how our economy was operating. So again, those are things that won't be bleeding through from the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, for many years. So that's something that won't do anything for that 8.5% year-over-year inflation we saw in the month of July. But again, the Biden administration holding their breath that, hey, we can take this to the bank and say over the long term, we can make our economy a little bit more independent in a way that actually would help us with inflation in the long run.
Hey, Kate, can you riff for a minute on something you had in Morning Money on Politico today about deficit reduction and how important that is to this package, and why there is some concern about whether or not the Biden administration might backslide a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about this is, boy, like, deficit reduction is really having a moment. There are a few years there, certainly in the Trump administration, yeah. And then maybe even at the beginning of the Biden administration, where there is a shifting view among economists that we don't need to worry so much about deficits. Clearly, that's shifted a lot, and it has a lot to do with inflation. And the concern that, you know, we heard Senator Manchin express a number of times is we're spending so much, we're borrowing, we're adding to, you know, right. There's deficits are going up, we're adding to the debt, that's fueling inflation. So they, you know, made sure to include some deficit reduction in this package, and it's pretty good. And you've seen groups like the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, Fiscal Hawks, they've endorsed this. They think it's great, but they're worried that there were some last-minute changes. Not, you know, nothing nefarious, just kind of procedural hurdles. They had to make a couple tweaks to the bill at the last minute that this group says would maybe not, would take away some of the sort of deficit reduction power, and they're worried that that could maybe it just wouldn't have as big of an effect on inflation, even if, as you pointed out, it's fairly small. They're calling for the Biden administration to kind of hold the line, make sure that the bill includes as much, or the law rather, includes as much deficit reduction as possible. And they're a little worried about student debt too, which we can get into, and the effects that would have on deficits and inflation.
Yeah. Okay. So Brian, I'm gonna posit something here, and then I want your reaction, and then Kate, you get the second bite at this apple. Look around for a minute. Oil is down. Lumber is down. Housing is down. Egg prices are down. Used car prices are down, for crying out loud. We have past peak inflation. It's all sunshine and light from here, inflation-wise. Discuss.
Well, let's wait for a few more inflation reports to see if that bears out, Kai. But I mean, yeah, certainly. Look, if you take a look at that July CPI report, which, you know, you've discussed at length on the programming before, which came out some time ago, I mean, it did show between the months of June and July, no substantial increase. It was essentially unchanged, you know, prices between those 2 months. So, you know, that is exactly what Jay Powell has said in the past, the Fed chairman, when he said that, well, inflationary numbers need to plateau before they eventually go down. And we've seen the plateau. We haven't seen the come down yet. But yes, the oil prices, having continued their declines over the course of the beginning of August, should point to another positive inflation report where maybe we will see further declines happening in other broad-based categories as well. But look, at the end of the day, this doesn't change the picture for policymakers. Inflation at an 8.5% level, that's higher than it was last year, still much too high and above the Fed's 2% target. So look, those interest rates are going to continue.
Kate, real quick, what do you think about my peak inflation is in the rearview mirror theory?
Oh, man, I would never say that. I think there are many people smarter than me who felt really burned last year. You remember, we had this conversation
that's true.
just about a year ago. And, I think, there's so many encouraging signs. It's really tempting to declare that. But I do think, you know, Jay Powell, for certain, and his colleagues at the Fed, they want to wait.
Right.
They're going to take it slow. They want to see a lot of evidence that, as Brian said, some more positive reports before they make that declaration.
All right. Super quick, just to deliver on the setup here. Jay Powell gives a speech at Jackson Hole, the big Fed retreat, next Friday. What's he going to say, Brian? Give me like the 15-second version.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but he's going to offer some update on how he sees the economy unfolding. Obviously, since the last Fed meeting at the end of July, there's been that updated inflation report. We've gotten a few more anecdotes in terms of how manufacturing and retail sales and other things have developed in the economy. And Bank of America, at least saying in their preview and what they expect, they think that he's going to say that the pace of hikes at some point is going to slow, perhaps teeing up a smaller comparatively rate hike in the Fed's next meeting in September of half a percentage point instead of the 0.75% that they had been delivering in the last two meetings. But we'll have to see. That'll be at 10 a.m. Eastern on Friday.
We will be talking about it next week. Kate, super quick, what do you think he's going to say? Basically what Brian laid out?
We're going to keep raising rates.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to say. And I don't know how much more specific he'll be, but definitely rates are still going up. And when they get up there, he's probably going to say that they're going to stay there for a while.
Kate,
I don't
Davidson.
Think that they're good. Yeah, good. Sorry.
No, that's all right. We're getting squeezed. Kate Davidson at Politico and Brian Chung at Yahoo Finance. Thanks, you two.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kai.
All right, we'll see you. Have a nice week. With the understanding that correlation is not causality, here are two things that happened today. No, wait, actually three, now that I think about it. Thing one is that General Motors said this morning that it's bringing back its quarterly dividend after suspending it early in the pandemic to hang on to its cash. Thing number two is that the company is also going to bump up what it calls opportunistic share repurchases. That is them, not me saying that. Buying back as much as $5 billion worth of their own stock. Oh, and thing three is that GM shares popped a bit more than 2.5% today on that news. Corporate share buybacks do not have the best of reputations, as we know. Marketplace's Lily Jamali explains why we love to hate them.
When companies have cash to spare, buying back shares is one way executives can reward shareholders. It's a move that can boost the share price. But critics say there are better ways to spend that cash.
Every dollar that goes into share buybacks is a dollar that's taken away from something else.
Nico Luciani of the Roosevelt Institute says GM, for example, could use the $5 billion it's just set aside for buybacks to pay its workers more, reduce prices, or bolster key initiatives like a deeper push into electric vehicles.
That's $5 billion that could be going into really accelerating the pace of getting those EVs, their new EVs, out into the market.
The company is moving forward with its EV plans, says GM spokesman Jim Kane. Its first battery plant is set to open within days in Ohio, with more underway.
The investments have reached a critical mass and the earnings are so strong, it means there is capital we can return to shareholders while keeping all our other investments on track.
Buybacks may not be popular with everyone, but Charles Elson of the University of Delaware says they're a critical tool.
If you don't return money to the investor, then no one's going to invest, and then you're not going to have any sort of business going forward, or the products that you produce won't be produced.
One other critique is that executives use buybacks to juice a company's stock price, often right around the time earnings season rolls around. Alice Boname of the University of Arizona says there's one other thing to keep in mind.
There's this idea that, you know, I reduce the number of shares and bing, my stock price is going to go up, but the value of the firm has also gone down.
GM didn't say in its announcement what the timeline for its buyback program will look like. The newly passed Inflation Reduction Act includes a 1% tax on stock buybacks that kicks in next year. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.